This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, another 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll hear this week, first, from Suspense, their story from October 4th, 1959, titled Room 203. After that, it's Diary of Fate and the Peter Drake entry, their story from January 2nd, 1948.
Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
You would think that the people who are closest to you are the people you know best. But sometimes you discover that they are the very people you don't know at all. People who live in a private world, a private room. And so, Suspense brings you Room 203 by Milton Lewis. Another tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
It was exactly 1 year after I married Tony, our anniversary. I managed to get away for a couple of days from the newspaper where I work. Tony and I were going to celebrate. And it all started out gaily enough. We went back to the same hotel where we'd spent our honeymoon. The bellboy took care of our luggage and was hanging around for a tip.
You're on the south side. Better breeze this side of the hotel.
Oh, it's very nice, very nice. Here you are.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Chris, this is a lovely room.
I'm glad you like it, darling.
And where did those flowers come from?
Oh, I guess they came from an admirer.
Oh, Chris, they're beautiful. You're the most thoughtful husband in the whole world, and I love you.
Roses for the first anniversary, orchids for the second, and maybe a mink coat for the third.
Well, that sounds nice, but unnecessary. And what about the fourth, fifth, and sixth?
I don't know. Really, darling, we better get ready. I made a reservation for us in the page room. The show goes on in just about, 15 minutes. Here, feel. Think I need a shave?
I think you'd better. And I have to get my dress out. I hope it isn't too wrinkled.
I got my shaving things out of my suitcase and went into the bathroom. I was just about to lather up when I heard Tony scream. Tony, what is it? What's the matter?
Over there in that room.
Where? What room?
Oh, that one across the courtyard. Oh, the light just went out.
What did you see?
It was so clear. I knew I saw it.
What? What did you see?
Well, I went to the window to pull down the shade, and I glanced out. You know how you do. Mm-hmm. And then I saw it.
You saw what?
That man was choking the girl.
Darling, what man?
The man in that room. He just kept choking her. It was awful.
All right, sweetheart. Don't be upset. It's all right.
I never saw anything like it. Chris, do something.
All right, I'll call the police.
The police? Why the police? Oh, maybe there's some explanation for it. Why don't you call the manager?
All right.
I don't understand it. I can't believe it happened, but I know I saw it.
Hello? I want to speak to the manager. While I was talking to the manager, I happened to glance at my wife. She had an expression on her face that I had never seen there before. It was a strangely poignant look, frightened and defeated. I'll never forget it.
Come in.
Good evening, Mr. Stewart. I'm Mr. Spencer, the night manager.
Good evening. This is my wife, Mr. Spencer.
How do you do, Mrs. Stewart?
How do you do?
Well, I understand you've had quite a shock. I'm glad you seem to have gotten over it. If you want me to send for the house physician...
Oh, no, thank you. That won't be necessary.
Sure?
Well, my wife said it wasn't necessary.
I'm just taking every precaution. Well, now, will you tell me exactly what happened, Mrs. Stewart?
Well, I went to the window to pull down the shade, and I saw a man.
Where did you see him?
Oh, over there, the room on the corner, the same floor we're on.
That would be room 203. But it's dark.
Well, he turned out the lights.
Did he? When did he do that?
A few minutes ago.
Yes, I called you right away.
You don't believe me, do you?
Why, of course, Mrs. Stewart, but you wouldn't expect me to just call the police without looking into this first. I have to make sure. We'll go over there and investigate now. You want to come with me, Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Oh, please.
But, honey, we'll only be a minute.
I want to go with you. I don't want to be here alone. Take me with you, Chris.
I looked at my wife, and there it was again. The same fear and self-doubt. We went with Mr. Spencer to room 203. He knocked on the door.
Doesn't seem to be anyone here.
Well, he had plenty of time to get away.
All right, we'd better have a look inside. I'll use my pass key. Come in. There's no one here.
All right.
Is this the room, Mrs. Stewart?
Yes. Yes, this is the room. They were standing right there near the bed.
Well, the room doesn't seem to be a bit disturbed. Everything is in place. Bedspread isn't even wrinkled.
But I tell you, I saw it. I did. I know I did.
Maybe it wasn't this room.
Yes, it was this room. I recognize this chair.
Mr. Spencer, does any other room have a chair like this one?
No, this is the only chair of this kind in the entire hotel. Each of our rooms has its own decorating scheme. But, Mrs. Stewart, perhaps...
Don't look at me that way. I tell you, I saw it.
Yes, of course. Just a moment, Mrs. Stewart. Front desk, please. Hello, this is Mr. Spencer. What is the name of the check-in for room 203 today? I see. And what about yesterday? Thank you. Mr. Stewart, there's been no one in this room for more than 48 hours.
We returned to our room. My wife was very upset. And I had 1,000 questions I wanted to ask, but I didn't. I knew that Tony herself would have to volunteer the information. She would tell me why she was so frightened. She would tell me because she trusted me. I wasn't going to force her to tell me anything. I waited for her to speak.
Chris, do you believe I saw it?
Of course I do. But you know, darling, it is funny the way that room didn't look as if anybody had been in it.
I tell you, I saw it, Chris. I saw it. I can still see it. I've got to have seen it.
What do you mean you've got to have seen it? Couldn't you have imagined it?
Yes. Yes, I may have. Darling, someday I'd like to tell you a story.
What kind of a story?
A sad story. A story you may not want to hear.
Why don't you tell it to me now?
No, not now, but maybe someday.
All right. Why don't you just close your eyes now, sweetheart?
All right, Chris.
She was exhausted, and she fell asleep. I just looked at her. She was so beautiful. I went to the window and looked out. And suddenly, I heard Tony scream.
Chris, where are you?
I'm right here.
Oh, Chris, darling, I saw them again. I saw them so clearly.
Sweetheart, you were dreaming.
No, I wasn't. I can still see them. I can see him choking her. Chris, don't you believe me?
Yes, I believe you.
She had long blonde hair, just like...
Like you?
Yes, like me. Oh, Chris, I want to get out of here. I want to go home.
That's a very fascinating story you tell me, Mrs. Stewart. You see a man strangle a girl from a hotel window, and now you seem to doubt the evidence of your own senses. Yes, I know there seems to be good reason to doubt. An empty room, no one there. Mrs. Stewart... Does your husband know about you?
No. No, he doesn't, Dr. Barnes.
Why didn't you tell him?
I was afraid to.
You'll have to tell him, Mrs. Stewart. I think that's part of the problem.
You don't believe me either, do you, Dr. Barnes? You don't believe me at all.
Is that you, Tony?
Yes. You're home early.
Yes, I am, honey. Things were slow at the paper today, so I got the day off. Did you go to the city?
I had some shopping to do, and I had lunch with Claire.
Anything else?
Oh, that's all.
Who is Dr. Barnes?
Doc... Why'd he ask about him?
You saw him at 10:30 this morning. I followed you.
Are you spying on me, Chris?
I heard you make the appointment on the phone this morning before I got up. I had a right to follow you.
Why, I just went for a checkup. I wasn't feeling
it. You don't go to a psychiatrist for a checkup, Tony. I don't like secrets.
Do you love me, Chris?
I love the girl I married.
I'm still the same girl.
Are you? The girl I married didn't hide things.
All right, Chris. What do you want to know?
Why did you go to this doctor?
I was his patient 5 years ago.
His patient?
I was in an institution 5 years ago.
What kind of an institution?
A hospital for the mentally sick.
My wife had been mentally ill. Maybe there had been a murder. Maybe she imagined it. There was nothing I could do but call the police.
Good evening. I'm Detective Green, homicide.
Please, come in. This is my wife, Mrs. Stewart.
How do you do, ma'am?
How do you do?
Well, what's the matter, Mrs. Stewart?
Nothing.
You look at me as if you know me.
No. No, I don't know you.
Let me explain, Detective Green.
I've seen you before. You're a reporter on the Examiner.
You must have a good memory. It's been a long time since I covered police news.
Well, it's part of my job. What's up?
Well, a few days ago, my wife and I decided to spend our anniversary at the Towers Hotel. And Tony looked out of our window across the courtyard and saw a man strangle a girl. They were in room 203 of that hotel. But you see, when the manager checked, the room was empty. And it hadn't been occupied for 2 days.
Did you get a good look at the man, Mrs. Stern?
Pretty good.
What'd he look like?
Well, he was a man of about 45. His hair was dark, but rather thin.
Go on.
He was about your height.
5'11". Go on. Any distinguishing features you remember?
Well, he looked a lot like you.
Like me?
Would you turn to the side, please?
Sure.
He looked exactly like you. He is you.
I was amazed when I heard my wife say that Detective Green was the murderer. I didn't know what to think. Was this part of a hallucination? Was Tony ill again? And suddenly, she started to cry.
Oh, Chris, please don't let her go away. Please.
All right, darling. Detective Green,
it's okay. It's all right, I understand. You'd better get your wife some help as soon as you can.
Oh, please, please.
Okay, Miss Stewart. The case is closed as far as I'm concerned. Good night.
He was the man. I know he was.
All right, Tony. Try to get some sleep. Finally, Tony went to sleep. I left the house. I walked a few blocks, uptown or downtown, maybe crosstown, I don't remember which. I didn't know what to believe, and I didn't know what to do. And when I got home and went to our room, Tony wasn't there. I went through the house, and then I found a note in the foyer, propped against the phone.
Dear Chris, I'm going away. It's not fair for me to stay here. I love you, Tony.
I was just going out the front door to find her when the phone rang. Hello?
Hello, Stewart.
It was my night editor at the Examiner.
Say, listen. Here's the tip I think you've been waiting for.
What do you mean?
They just found the body of a girl in the river about a quarter of a mile from the Towers Hotel.
What did she look like?
Blonde hair, slender, very pretty. She couldn't have been more than 20. And she was strangled.
I'll be right over. And thanks.
Writing that note, Mrs. Stewart, was an act of weakness. If there's anything we've learned, it's that you can't run away. I'm not going to let you stay here tonight.
But where can I go, Dr. Barnes?
Where do you want to go?
Home.
That's where I think you should go. Dr. Barnes speaking. Who? Mrs. Stewart, it's your husband. Will you speak to him?
Oh, yes. Hello, Chris. What? Are you sure? No. Chris, you're not just saying that because... Where? Give me the address. Okay, I'll take a taxi and meet you there. Bye.
What happened, Mrs. Stewart?
They just found the body of a girl. Chris thinks it's the girl I saw. I'm going to meet him at the morgue to identify her for the police.
I could feel my heart skip a beat when I saw Tony. I knew then how much she meant to me. We only had time for a quick kiss, and then we went into the morgue. Detective Green was already there with some man from homicide. I could feel Tony stiffen when she recognized him. I didn't like the way she was acting, and I began to hate Detective Green for the way he inspired fear in my wife. The men stood around like mourners. Detective Green lifted the sheet, and he turned to my wife.
Is this the girl you say was strangled, Mrs. Stewart?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
All right, gentlemen, that's all. Thank you for coming here, Mrs. Stewart.
Take me out of here, Chris.
All right, darling.
Chris, that was the girl.
Then why didn't you say so in there?
Didn't you see the way he was looking at me? She's the girl. I'll never forget her face, never. And he killed her.
You take a cab and go right home.
Well, where are you going?
Never mind. I've got something to do. You go right home.
Here you are. Keep the change.
Thanks, lady.
Good evening.
Detective Green. What do you want?
I've been waiting for you. No, don't try to go. I have a gun.
What do you want?
I know you recognize Julie. And I know where your husband is. He's talking to the chief. You know what I have to do, don't you?
No, I don't.
You're the only living witness. Why did you tell your husband I was the man you saw?
You were the man I saw. I thought I was out of my mind, but now I know I'm not.
No, you're not. Would have been better for you if you were.
But the manager said the room was empty.
That's right, for 48 hours. But 2 days ago, I stayed in room 203. And I kept the key. And then yesterday, I took 202 with Julie. And made a suite of 202 and 203. Unregistered.
So you were in 203. I did see you.
That's right, room 203. And nobody would have known how a body got into an unregistered room except that Julie raised the shade. And you saw it. It's too bad that you saw what you thought you saw. And it made it such a nuisance for me. Using a linen truck to get her out of the hotel, putting her in my police car, dumping her in the river.
But why did you kill her?
I'm a married man, Mrs. Stewart. Julie got hard to handle. It was too bad, but I just had to get rid of her. And I have to get rid of you too, Mrs. Stewart. I've met up with a lot of killers in my time. They always have a way of trapping themselves. But that's not going to happen to me. This job's going to be perfect. What's that? Mrs. Stewart, where does the store lead to?
The garden.
Tony!
Oh, Chris, Tony! What happened?
He started shooting first. They had to shoot back. Tony, he's dead.
Oh, Chris. Chris, you won't believe it, but I wasn't scared. I was strangely calm all the time he was talking. The fact that he came here to kill me proved definitely that I was right all the time. I finally knew that I never imagined any of it. I finally knew I was perfectly sane.
And always have been, darling. Look, we still have our anniversary to celebrate, haven't we?
How would you like to go to Paris? I understand it's lovely in the fall.
Plays no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 84, page 327.
In the Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name Peter Drake. Occupation, treasurer of Lewis Swerdling and Company. A comfortable life for a man of your temperament, wasn't it, Peter? A life that required few important decisions. An occupation that dealt primarily with numbers. You would have gone on in your work secure and contented. If it had not been for your wife, Marcia. She was blindly proud and avaricious. But you loved her, didn't you, Peter? Because of that love, you stand now in the bedroom of your home, the muzzle of a pistol pressed against your temple. And in less than a minute, you will be dead. Soon I will write the final entry under the name Peter Drake. When I have written, I shall read from his record in The Diary of Fate. I hope you'll understand. Peter Drake, it was your unreasoning love for your wife that forced you from the security of your world of numbers. And it was the impelling power of her greedy ambition that drove you to a grim decision. The most important decision of your life. But the ultimate outcome was determined by a little thing. So commonplace and innocent that you failed to notice it that night when you stealthily stepped into your cousin's room.
Hello, Arthur.
Peter, what are you doing sneaking in here at this hour? Why, well, you're drunk.
You're working late, Arthur. Are you worried?
Well, yes, I am. I don't know what to do.
I do. I know the answer, Arthur. And this is your last chance. I'll tell you if you'll make me a partner.
So that's why you came here. No, get out of here. Go on, get out.
Oh, no. Not yet, I.
What are you doing? Drop that gun.
Since when do you keep your gun on your desk? Afraid of burglars, Arthur?
No, Peter, please. Give me back my gun.
Sit down, Arthur. There, desk.
What are you going to do, Peter? No! No!
As you fired that shot, Peter Drake, a plan was put in motion, and the end for you was certain. At that moment, I, fate, moved unnoticed into your life. Little things. A moment's hesitation. A sudden rainstorm. A lost wallet. These are the tools with which I work. Let us turn back to the point where it all began. The country club dance. Marcia had planned on the occasion for weeks. Regarded it as an important social opportunity. And yet, it was only half over, and you were on your way home.
I can't understand you, Marcia. You talk about nothing but that dance for a month, and then for no apparent reason, you want to leave in the middle of it.
No apparent reason. Are you blind?
What was the matter?
I'll tell you.
very simple language. I've never been so completely humiliated in my life. Thurman and Artis Woodland and their fat wives at a table with the governor. And we seated at the other end of the hall with that obnoxious Mr. Ross.
Oh, Ross isn't a bad sort, Marcia.
He's a fool. And a nobody. And so are the rest of the people at our table. Complete nobody. Well, Cousin Thurman's wife made certain of that.
Harriet, don't be absurd.
He's jealous of me. He made sure I wasn't on the awards committee, nor the receiving line, nor anything else that might have put me in the public eye.
Marcia, darling, we've been over the same thing a thousand times.
And I'm fed up with it. Sick and tired of being pushed around by the mighty Squirdling.
We've got to be patient. Uncle Lewis left the business to Thurman and Arthur, not to me.
And the poor nephew became treasurer. The main treasurer for 6 years. You're brilliant, Peter. It's smart to say treasurer. You have more brains than the two of them. You should be a partner.
Please, Marcia.
Then let them try to snub and slight and look down their noses. Do something about it. Demand it. You've got to become a partner.
Yes, Peter. You felt the security of your sheltered world crumble before the insistent nagging of your wife, whom you love deeply. You would do as Marcia asked. You had even begun to believe she was right when an hour after you arrived at your office the next morning, you boldly entered the office occupied by your cousins, Thurman and Arthur.
Left the party early last night, Peter. Anything wrong?
No, I had a headache, that's all.
Bad. Night party. Well, Peter, what do you want to tell me about? Does her account?
No, Thurman, that's been taken care of. I want to talk about my position. I'm not satisfied, Thurman.
What do you mean, Peter?
Just this. I want to be taken in on equal footing. I want to be up there with you and Arthur.
What are you talking about?
I'll handle this now, Arthur. Now, look, Peter. As a treasurer, you're top. Keeping books, watching expenses, that sort of thing. That's what you're best suited for. As far as making the big deals, handling our delicate foreign commitments, I think you're still a good treasurer.
Look here, Thurman. I've made big money for this company for years. I handled our war contracts. I established our overseas trade.
Yes, you've always done your job well, Peter. No question about that. But no one man is indispensable. Now, don't forget that. And don't force my hand, Peter.
You mean you'd fire me?
Now, let's be sensible about this. Right now, there's nothing open. Arthur and I can handle the whole show. Need to? We want you. Exactly where you are. Stand each other. Now, is there anything else?
No, Thurman. Nothing else.
Very well. Then let's forget it.
Yes, Marcia, I talked to Thurman and Arthur. Things look much better. I'm confident that soon...
How soon, Peter?
Oh, I don't know. It all depends. They both agree my work has done the firm a lot of good.
Did they say anything specific?
Well, they said they're not quite ready yet, but when things pick up...
Oh, Peter, they're stalling you. And they'll keep on stalling you forever. Well, I'm tired of waiting. I'm not going to wait.
What do you mean?
I mean I'm through. 6 years I've been insulted and looked down on by this word. Can't take any more. I'm through, I tell you. Through.
Marcia, you don't mean that. You can't leave me.
Peter, you're hurting my arm.
You can't leave me, do you hear? I won't let you. I love you, Marcia. I love you so much that I'd do anything.
My arm, Peter.
Please, Marcia, you've got to give me more time.
You'd need a whole lifetime. Harriet and Bertha are afraid of me. They'll see that you never get in.
I will. I swear I will. But I need time. I love you so, darling. Please give me time.
All right, Peter. I'll give you 6 months. Frankly, I think it's a waste of time. You'll get into the firm only when the Swirling brothers are dead and buried. By that time, I'll be too old to care.
Yes, Peter. Your wife had issued an ultimatum. You were forced to a decision. All that night, her words raced through your tortured mind. And by morning, you had reached your decision and established your plan. At the office, you said no more about a partnership. You did your work patiently and quietly. Several weeks went by, and when your chance came, you seized it. You had taken the monthly report into Thurman's office.
Monthly report, eh? Well, thank you, Peter.
Congratulations, my boy. That Dessa thing was a nice piece of work.
Thanks, Thurman. It did work out well, didn't it? Would you like to go over the report?
No. I'm sure it's in fine shape. You just leave it on the desk. By the way, how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm all right. I've been getting a little outdoor exercise lately, and... incidentally, Thurman, perhaps you would like to come with me tomorrow.
Where?
Duck hunting. You used to be a pretty good shot, and I have an excellent place up on the lake.
Well, sounds great, Peter. I'd like nothing better. But I've got a golf date with Larry Kolpak tomorrow. Maybe some other time.
Okay, but if you have any questions on the report, I'll be in the office all afternoon.
Just a minute.
Yes, Thurman?
About this duck shoot. Is he back by noon?
Yes, if we leave early, say about 4:30.
George, I'll do it. You pick me up at 4:30.
Fine. I'll pick you up at your house.
Good. Better sharpen your sights, boy. You're going to have to go some to beat me. I'll be gunning with a vengeance.
Don't worry, Thurman. So will I.
What's the matter, Peter? You're shivering.
I'm freezing. Aren't you cold?
Oh, I like it. It's invigorating. How'd you ever find this place? Not another soul in sight.
Uh-oh.
Here they come. It's your shot, Peter. Oh, you missed again.
It's this gun. There's something wrong. I can't seem to get the right trigger for you. Maybe it's these gloves.
Blame the gun, the cold, even the ducks. But never the hunter, huh? You can't get away with that. I've got four already. Oh, take your gloves off like I did.
Don't have to. I still think it's the gun. Let's trade and see how we do. You're using the heavier shot, you know.
All right, yeah. Oh, hurry up. Did they come again?
Thurman, turn around.
Peter, stop joking. Don't point that gun at me.
I'm not joking, Thurman. I'm going to kill you with your own gun.
No, Peter, you're out of your mind. You'll never get away with this. Please, Peter, listen to me.
You thought I kept my gloves on because I was cold. No, Thurman. Only your prints will be on this gun. I'm going to blow your stomach wide open.
No, Peter, no.
It'll be an accident.
No.
Now pray, Thurman.
Yes.
Pray.
Yes, Peter Drake. In the cold of the morning, you killed a man. Goaded on by the whiplash tongue of the woman you loved, you committed murder. Now, Peter, the plan was finished, complete. The end for you ordained. There was no turning back. Now there are many entries to be made. Soon I will record them all in the Diary of Fate. Yes, Peter Drake. You were convincing with your story of how Thurman met his death. Only his fingerprints were on the gun. And it substantiated your story of how he held the gun by the barrel while he tapped the loose forelock with the butt when the gun accidentally discharged. You had seen to it that the marks of the oarlock were on the butt, put there after his death. And it was marked down as another hunting casualty. And you can clearly recall shortly after Thurman was buried, when you entered Arthur's office, confident that now your long-scheduled promotion was a certainty.
Arthur, why didn't you speak to me before you signed this thing? I could have smelled that trick a mile away. It's only been a month since Thurman's accident, and you get us into a jam like this.
The point is, I didn't ask you. And I am asking you now. What shall we do?
Make me a partner, Arthur, and I can give you all the answers.
This isn't the time, Peter.
Time? You're hedging, Arthur. You know as well as I do you need me here. I belong here. And the only reason I'm not is because your wife is jealous of Marcia.
You shouldn't have said that, Peter. True or not, you shouldn't have said it. If I want your advice again, I'll call you. Good day.
But if it's really that serious, Arthur has to give in, Peter. He's cornered.
Not quite. He still thinks he can find the answer alone. And if he's not a complete fool, he can.
Can't you do something to prevent that? To get him in deeper?
Juggle the books, you mean? Not a chance.
You've got to do something. We'll never get another opportunity like this. When Thurman dies, we've got our big break. If you let this chance slip by
without... There's nothing I can do about it, so forget it.
There is a way to trap him. There must be. If you weren't such a coward, you'd find it.
You dare call me that? What do you know about courage, Marcia? Marcia, this is going to be a shock to you. But do you suppose killing Thurman was easy?
Peter.
Yes, Marcia, I murdered him. Shot him in the belly with his own gun. Now will you shut up and leave me alone?
You. Everyone said it was an accident. And all this time, Peter, you've gone this far. You can't stop now. You've got to go ahead.
No, Marcia. No, no, please.
This is our chance. Work on the book. Ruin Arthur. Trap him.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop nagging, pushing, and forcing. In heaven's name, leave me alone and stop goading me. I can't stand anymore. I can't stand anymore, I tell you.
Where are you going?
Ow! I've got to have time to think.
As you left, your mind was a turmoil of frustration. You were afraid to go on, and more afraid not to. Then, in a frantic effort to escape your thoughts, you went into a bar. The alcohol was warm inside you, and the churning in your brain quieted and finally stopped. Then you left and went straight to Arthur's house. A light burned in the library. You watched through the French doors as Arthur sealed an envelope, laid it on the mantel. Stealthily, you opened the doors and stepped into the room.
Hello, Arthur.
Peter, what are you doing sneaking in here at this hour? Why, you're drunk.
You're working late, Arthur. Are you worried?
Yes, I am. I don't know what to do.
I do. I know the answer, Arthur, and this is your last chance. I'll tell you if only you'll make me a partner.
So that's why you came here. No. Now get out of here. Go on, get out.
Oh, no. Not yet, Arthur.
What are you doing? Drop that gun.
Since when do you keep your gun on the desk? Afraid of burglars, Arthur?
Now, Peter, please. Put that gun down.
Sit down, Arthur. There at the desk.
What are you going to do, Peter? No. No!
Now, Peter Drake, you had killed again. You had murdered another man. Then you moved quickly. You wiped the fingerprint, put the pistol in Arthur's right hand, pushed his chair close to the desk, and ran from the room. You hurried to your house where you found Marcia asleep. You got into bed at once, and you knew that now, at last, you would rule the swirling empire. Now, Marcia would be happy. You didn't know how long you had slept before you were awakened by Marcia rushing into the room.
Peter, wake up. Have you lost your mind completely? How much do you think you can get away with?
Well, what's the matter?
Here. It's all over the morning paper. Listen to this. Arthur Swerdling dead. President of the Lewis Swerdling Company was found shot to death in the library of his home late last night. Did you do it, Peter?
Yes. Yes, I did it.
Are you sure nobody saw you?
No one saw me. It all happened so fast.
What about this? Although there was every indication Swerdling killed himself, police were silent about a single clue. It indicates that someone else may have done
a clue? Oh, no, Marcia. What could it be?
Peter, listen to me. You've got to get to the office quick. Make believe that nothing has happened. You didn't see the morning paper.
A clue. If only I could remember.
Get hold of yourself. You've got to hurry.
Yes. Oh, I'm so shaky.
I'll call a cab while you dress. Hurry.
As you rode in the taxi to your office, the fatal words drummed over and over in your brain. The police were silent about a single clue. Yes, Peter, they had found something, and the cold terror of what that meant to you made your fingers tremble as you reached for your wallet to pay the cab fare. Then, for an instant, your heart stopped beating. Your wallet was missing. Frantically, you searched through all your pockets, but it was gone. The awful fact descended over you like a shroud. You ran inside and called Martha. Had her look for it at home. Her voice was heavy with fear, and she told you it was not there. You had to find out. Had to know if your wallet was the clue. You decided to go back to Arthur. And in a few moments later, as the wave of panic mounted inside you, you walked up to his door and pressed the bell.
I'm Peter Drake. I'd like to see Bertha, Mrs. Swerdling.
Were you a friend of Mrs. Swerdling?
Yes, a cousin. I'm the treasurer of his firm.
Mrs. Swerdling's pretty broken up. She said she didn't want to see anybody.
Oh, I understand, of course. Yes. May I ask who you are?
Lieutenant Fitzsimmons, police department.
Oh, I read in the paper that you men had found some sort of clue. Do you mind telling me what you found?
I really couldn't say, Mr. Drake.
I couldn't go back to the office, Marcia. Look at me. I'm shaking all over. And the police wouldn't tell me a thing.
I didn't find your wallet, Peter. I looked everywhere.
Huh? What am I going to do?
Think, Peter. When did you have your wallet last?
At that bar. I must have paid for my drinks last night.
Peter, what's the matter?
That man coming up the walk. He's the waiter. The one at the bar. And look at that tall man in back of him. It's the detective. I talked to him at Arthur.
Peter.
Sure, it's simple now. They must have found my wallet in Arthur's library. They traced my movements, and that waiter, he told him what time I left the bar.
You can get away. Run, Peter. Off the back.
Look. Stall him, will you? Stall him as long as you can.
Where are you going?
To the bedroom. Come on, answer the door.
Mrs. Drake?
Yes?
I'm Lieutenant Fitzsimmons, police department. Like to talk to your husband in connection with the death of Arthur Swerdling.
Yeah, he's not feeling well. If you could come back.
What's that?
Peter! Oh, no!
He's dead. Killed himself.
Yes? Peter Drake is dead by his own hand, and justice has been served. Although the man is dead, I, Fate, have still another entry to make in his record. And lest any mortal fail to understand my writing beyond this finality, I will add the reason. In a few moments, I will write again. When I have written, I will read from the Diary of Fate. Delicate scales of justice seek their equilibrium, do I, Fate, move through the lives of mortals. Only when good has counterweighed evil do I rest. Remember that when the thought is born, the word spoken, the deed performed, the pen indicts. And having been written, the words are indelibly entered in the eternal ledger of the universe. Take heed, you who listen, that your decision be not for evil. For once the decision is made, there is no turning back. And if the decision be for evil, the end for you is certain. In the life of Peter Drake, the plan was set in motion with his decision. And the conclusion was inevitable. For him, self-destruction.
Suicide? But why?
Because he was cornered. Because you came after him for Arthur's murder.
What?
Yes. And he murdered Thurman, too. Oh,
wait a minute. Arthur Swerdling was a suicide. We found the note he left.
What note?
Arthur Swerdling left a suicide note on the mantle of his room. He confessed juggling the company's books. That's why I'm here. Your husband was the firm's treasurer, and I thought that...
But the clue. You found a clue.
Oh, that was nothing. That turned out to be a false lead.
No. No, you're lying. What about the wallet? He lost his wallet.
Yeah, he did that. This man just told me about it down at the door.
Yeah, lady, that's right. You see, he lost it at my bar, and I just wanted to return it. I figured it was the honest thing to do.
Now it is time to close the book. Another entry has been duly recorded on the pages of eternity. Sensitive scales of justice are suspended in absolute balance. In the case of Peter Drake, as in the cases of all mortals, I, Fate, am but the instrument of a plan. And the little things that happen every day, the trivia of life, are the tools with which I work. It was a little thing, the innocent loss of a wallet, which, magnified a thousandfold by Peter's complex of guilt, proved his undoing. Ponder well the moral. And remember, you who listen, that there is a page for you in
The Diary of Fate. Produced by Larry Finley, Diary of Fate is a Finley transcription brought to you from Hollywood. Thank you.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with another one. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find links there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.